A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Well, you little big time starlet on the stage, absolutely smashed it.
Oh gosh, I feel silly for feeling nervous now, like really nervous. I think I definitely would have been sick, like if I'd have had my head over a toilet, for sure. But actually, it was so fun, wasn't it?
It was amazing. There was a one point where you went, my heart feels like it's going to burst. You were like, feel my heart. Can you feel my heartbeat? I was like, no, I can feel it. And then I was like, take a deep, big, deep breath.
Yeah, but then I felt your heart and yours wasn't even beating. It was like, you're dead.
But as soon as we opened those stage doors and you stepped out, you would not have known that you were nervous at all. You smashed it, George.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I felt in safe hands because I was next to you. So,
thanks, mate. It was a roaring success, I think.
It was. It was so much fun. I actually really enjoyed it. And it's so, do you know what? It's so nice. Because obviously we do these podcasts from our bedroom. You know, we don't get any feedback or like, well, we do obviously via Instagram, but no immediate feedback apart from if our producer's telling us off. But it was so nice to sort of get that instant or ha ha ha, or you know, like all of that kind of stuff. It's really nice.
I loved even though it was in a fairly large venue, you could see the whites of people's eyes. Like we could see faces, we could see smiles, we could see waves. I was really trying to like look at every single person that was there and make sure that we caught their eye. I'm really proud of us, you know. It's been a really big 4 years of building people listening to this, and it's not an easy thing, you know. The world of podcasting, people think, oh yeah, you know, I'll just put out a little podcast and I'll see what happens, but you know, we've really grafted, and so it was just lovely. And then, you know, meeting everybody afterwards, photographs taken, you know, with people that are like, I feel like I've spent my entire life with you for the last 4 years of parenting, you know. We've been walking around the park with them, we've been in the supermarket with them, we've been in their car with them. It was just great.
Been in bed with them.
We've been in bed with them.
But it's so true. And it has been a lot, like it has been a long slog. Like if you think about it, we used to record in a studio. So I used to work full time as well, like in an office. Yeah. So I used to have to sneak out, didn't I? And come and meet in the studio and record and then go back. And like, when I look back, it hasn't been easy at all. It felt like a really like a nice celebration of everything and everyone. And we so appreciate people, especially those who came from like really far away to come and watch us. It was freezing on Thursday night. So thank you to all you guys who came down, and we 100% we'll be doing some more.
We're definitely going to go on tour next year. I met a couple of girls from Oxford. There were these two lovely girls that I met from Leicester. You know, people have really slogged to get down there. I was really trying to like drum up a crew to come out in Soho with me, but in the end, it was just me, Dozza, and Katie Kirkpatrick.
How late did you go out to?
Actually, quite sensible. We left at 10 to 1.
Oh, right. I actually got home at 1, so I wasn't that different to you at all.
Yeah, it was fine. All good. Hangover was not that. I was standing in Luna's nativity play the next morning, and I was thinking, don't breathe too heavily, because Miss Morris, the headmistress, was standing next to me, and I was like, I can smell vodka. It's either me or Dozza. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know, obviously, if you weren't at the live and you couldn't make it down, we managed to record three podcasts out of the amazing conversations that we had that night. The first chat was with Ate Jewel, who is a beauty journalist, diversity advocate, and like queen of all things like outspoken. I just bloody love her. And the wonderful Kat Sims, who, you know, not so smug now, she came on to talk about how she felt, well, how we all feel after we have kids. Like, who are we after, you know, the little babies come out? And she also talked about her sobriety. And yeah, I loved this conversation.
Yeah, me too. And I think when we first, you know, we first started sort of deciding what we were going to talk about, we thought, you know, we're going to talk about the changes in our body. But actually, it quickly became apparent that the biggest changes since we've become parents have actually been in our mind and who we are as a person. And I think both, you know, both Ate and Kat, you know, everything they talked about was all about, you know, how they've changed as a person. And actually, in the end, we all decided we prefer the person and the people we are now.
Oh my God, yeah.
Which was really nice. So, should we get into it?
Oh, let's get into it. Georgia, who are we chatting to today?
We are chatting live to the lovely Ate Jewel and Kat Sims.
Right, guys, you don't want us to be gibbering on all night. You want to see our first guests. So I want you to put your hands together and I want you to introduce and give us a very, very warm welcome to multi-award-winning beauty journalist, broadcaster and diversity advocate, Dr. Ate Jewel, and
author, podcaster and content creator, Kat Sims.
Like a glass of champagne.
I would love a glass of champagne. Thank you very much.
For some water.
I'm not drinking because I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Woohoo!
You can laugh.
You can laugh.
I am, and I'm a year sober as of last week. Some people who don't drink don't even like to drink out of a glass that looks like it should have alcohol in it.
Oh, really?
I don't have that problem, so I'll have like a tonic and lime and I want it in a wine glass.
Yes, yes.
Because then I feel like I'm at the adults' table, you know?
Yes. But how are you both? How are
you? Good, so excited to be here. Hi, everyone!
Who loves Ate and Kat? They're amazing, aren't they? Right, let's get into the conversation today. So we're going to talk about kind of confidence, body image, why we put so much pressure on ourselves after we become parents, basically who we are after we have our kids, because it comes up a lot on the podcast. Lots of people sending in questions. So I guess kind of kick us off with the sort of pressure that we feel as mums and dads when we have our kids.
For me, I found that the pressure wasn't actually so much in body confidence, although that was something I put myself, but actually the pressure of what being a mum meant and that idea of the perfect mum. I think we sort of put motherhood up on this pedestal and there's this sense of perfection. And, you know, you have a baby and people... I mean, I just saw people have babies and then... the next day they're out walking in the park and they looked great. I had a baby and I was like, I feel like I've been hit by a bus. And also, what the fuck have I done?
Yeah.
And literally thinking, I can't do anything. Like, how am I ever going to have a bath?
Yeah.
Mm. Like, the whole logistics of it didn't come apparent until that she was actually here. And I think for me, that pressure to behave a certain way and to bond in a certain way and to love a certain way... really sent me spiralling. Yeah. And that was the pressure.
How did you feel? Like, how did you feel about yourself as a parent? Did you feel like you were the parent you wanted to be?
I thought I was going to be fucking brilliant.
Don't we all?
Yeah. I'd always been taught, if you, like, plan, work hard and prepare, you'll be successful. So I was like, I'm planning, work hard and prepare. And I made a birth plan.
Oh, my God. Did you do, like, a board to take into the delivery room?
I shit you not. It was 4 pages double-sided, laminated and colour-coded for what referred to me, to the kids, to the baby. And the midwife, bless her, was very gracious when she took it. I can only imagine what she said when she got back to the midwife station. She was like, oh my God, I've got this.
She probably, yeah, she'd give me, oh, we've got one of those.
Everybody's like, I'm not having her, no, she's yours. And... it was just an absolute shock. I was blindsided by the lack of control and my inability to really affect anything. And I think now, looking back, if I'd just been able to relax, if I'd just been able to have the confidence to not put all that pressure on myself, I don't think I would have ended up with postnatal depression. I don't think I would have ended up as miserable as I was. But nobody told me that it would be really hard and that you'd probably hate quite a lot of it at the beginning.
But they don't tell you that part.
No, they don't tell you
Did you have a similar experience, Ate?
I have twins.
or what?
No, she didn't.
I have twins, and it was shocking.
Yeah.
And again, I was like, why didn't anyone tell me this? Not that I would have believed it, but it was really shocking. And I remember, I never had that cup of tea where you could put the baby down, because it was like in stereo. Someone was always kicking off. And I also went back to work after 3 weeks.
Because you're self-employed.
Because I'm self-employed, and there's no maternity, nothing.
How did that actually work?
I remember double breastfeeding while typing a feature about Kim Kardashian. I remember going,
she just has a bottle of this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband's amazing. He works from home as well, and I had my mum, so I had a lot of support. But I just remember, and I had that feeling of, they came home, and the day after they came home, my husband went out, and he came back, and I burst into tears, and I said, why did you abandon us? And that kind of feeling really vulnerable in a way that I'd never felt vulnerable before. And then 2 days after they were born, I remember walking out the house to get milk and then having to go back home going, oh shoot, you've got kids, you can't just walk out the house. I had left them sleeping because I was like, that was when it hit me. I can't just live my life.
Yeah.
And I remember,
my first night in the hospital, and all night she was crying. And at 4 o'clock, I remember just like holding her and like running to the midwife station going, I don't know what's wrong. Have you fed her?
like that deadpan.
And I was like, oh no. How often do I have to do that? She was like, basically all the time. And I was like, yeah, that'll be the problem. Obviously, the poor kid was starving, like hours old. And then obviously I put her in and she puked everywhere. And then I was like, well, now I'm rubbish at this. That's what I always say to them. I'm like, just, it's all right to be in bed and eat takeaway and watch box sets. Yeah. Don't let anybody through the door unless they agree to leave 45 minutes later. And in the meantime, they have to bring food.
I don't think we ever really understood that, actually. And I think after Luna and Axel, because they're born 3 weeks apart, we were just genuinely like, right, okay, let's get back to normal life.
Yeah.
It was like, I can't even sit down without
wincing. I remember going for lunch with my mum and family in a cafe in Cheltenham. And James was talking to someone. He was like, oh, my wife had a baby 3 days ago. And they literally looked at him and me like, what?
Yeah.
And then one of them went, what, so you didn't die or something? And I was like, on the inside, I mean, in my head, I wanted to do that. Like, I wanted to be back doing those things. Mm. But my body was saying, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, because, like, it is, however they come out, through the love tunnel or out the sunroof, it is
a love tunnel.
Love tunnel.
It didn't feel very loving afterwards.
No, it doesn't. No.
Very loving now, no.
It is a physical trauma that your body needs to recover from, but nobody, my mum had me. She was in hospital for 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm.
That was standard. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. And so I think that recovery period that used to be enforced has now gone. Nobody reminds you that actually that's really important.
Yeah.
So exactly. You mentioned that your husband went off to work, obviously, went back to work, tried to, get on with his life, had to get on with his life. How did you feel about him going back to work and you being at home with the twins? Was there any resentment there?
Also trying to work.
Because we had our own company, production company, so we were freelancery. So, and we worked together. I was very lucky because he was very present. He was literally, and also when you have twins, you haven't got that precious, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
I was like, just get stuck in it. I didn't have that precious. I was like, thank you for not leaving me. I'm just grateful you're here.
Yes.
And so he was amazing. I couldn't have done it. I just remember, they were up all the time at the night time and we didn't sleep. And I remember saying to him, I was crying and I was hallucinating. And I went to the doctor saying, I am hallucinating. I saw crawling babies all over the room. It was the weirdest, scariest thing I've ever. And the doctor said, oh, it's because you're so sleep deprived, your brain, did you know this? If you're, this happens to like people who get like tortured and like sleep deprivation, your brain starts to hallucinate to try and give yourself downtime. So it
crawling babies.
Yeah, so that it was like your brain trying to force you into a dream state to chill.
Wow.
But instead, it was just for me. I was just like, and I was like, Daniel, what's happening? How many are there? Oh, there's babies everywhere. I think I had some postnatal depression, but people didn't talk about it. And I would just stare out the window weeping.
And when the midwife came round, I remember when the midwife came round and she was lovely. She was called Ray, I remember. And she sat there and she was like, so how are you getting on? And I was like, And she was like, oh, talk to me about the first 3 days. How have they been? I was like, She was like, you can cry. I was like, help me. I just genuinely did not know what to do. There was no manual. There was nothing there. So you said looking out the window, weeping. There was a lot of that.
Quietly looking out the window, weeping. And the misogyny I found very interesting.
Yeah. Well, tell us.
Just like, you know, just because a baby comes out of you doesn't mean you know what to do.
No, or you know them at all.
Or you know what's going on. Yeah. And like, you know, if I went, you know, now we'd call it a mindful walk, but like 11 years ago, I just got the hell out of the house. And I went around the corner and I'd just be like, oh my gosh. And then I remember bumping into someone saying, where are your babies? Like, what a wicked evil mother you are.
But also, nobody ever asks your husband, like when your husband goes out to the pub or something, nobody ever goes, who's with the kids?
Yeah. Although actually, Atta, you did go out for milk and leave them behind, so maybe they were. Maybe they'd seen you and they thought.
Maybe they've got form, to be fair.
There she goes again. Yeah. I've got twins, I can't imagine. But when did you feel like you came back up for air and you started feeling like yourself again?
I'd say off me in 2018.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's still waiting.
Has it happened?
When did I feel like myself? I mean, when they were maybe toddlers, that kind of nursery, preschooly, like, okay, I've got the hang of this.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, but it was a lot, you know? I didn't sleep. I gave myself type 2 diabetes during that time because I was working 18-hour days while looking after kids.
Oh, my God.
Sugar was my go-go juice.
Yeah.
And that broke my body, you know? Mm. And there's always a price to pay. And it was just learning. And I always used to think balance was a dirty word because I was very unbalanced. But just feeling peaceful and happy, enjoying my babies, enjoying my work, enjoying who I am. That did take a few years to kick in, and no one talks about that much. I'm glad you guys are talking about it, but people at the time, back in 2011,
they weren't discussing it. This obviously, this chat is about, you know, who we are after kids. Now, Kat, you entered motherhood drinking, partying. I mean, we've had a night or two together. You know, we won't talk about it now. But now you're sober.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about what happened with the realisation that you weren't actually the same person as you were when you entered motherhood to the person sitting here now. Totally different.
I mean, to be honest, now I look back on it, I've never really been the person that I am now, like even before motherhood, you know, because drinking and my addiction always was there in some way, shape or form. I definitely behaved like an addict throughout my whole life. And of course, my husband was home for a month and then he went away on tour for 6 or 7 months. And we didn't have family nearby. So I was very, I'm talking about walking. I just used to put her in the buggy and I would walk around our park. I mean, for hours.
Right.
Like, I mean, it wasn't healthy. I wasn't even podcasting or anything. It was literally just silence. I think I'd start talking to myself. I talk to myself a lot, but
I still do that.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite things.
I'm my best friend.
I'm my best friend.
Oh, no, you're my best friend. But
that kind of freedom of the before and how that was the old me, I found it incredibly difficult. And I think what I struggled with was feeling like I had to now become a mother.
Yeah.
Like there was some sort of transition that I had to make, otherwise I wasn't doing it right. And now I'm like, no, I just am. Like, there's no, I'm a mum, you're a mum, we all do it differently, we all look different, we've all got different circumstances. I was trying to conform to something that didn't really exist.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was always going to lose that battle. And so my self-esteem was on the floor. Obviously, postnatally depressed, wasn't diagnosed until Billy was about a year. And I'd never failed at anything before. Mm. Like that, you know, I'd been somebody that had done really well at school and I'd got the jobs and done all that, had never failed, and I felt like the worst.
And you felt like you failed.
Yeah.
I felt like I'd really failed. And it took me years. Mm. Like even now, I still struggle with one thing. I remember the breastfeeding Billy was a real issue for me. And because it was at the time when everybody was like, you must keep feeding, you must keep feeding, you must keep feeding. Mm. And after about 8 weeks, my mum turned around and said, listen, I've stayed out of this, but I think you need to give her some formula.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we were so batshit crazy by this point. I made Jimmy hold the bottle at the same time as me so that we couldn't blame me for
like
giving her
giving
formula.
Her poison.
Well, yeah, because we were told it was like a combination of cocaine, tequila and dung beetles. Do you know what I mean? That's how it was sold to us.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And then I called the health visitor the next morning or something and I now I look back and go, why didn't she follow up? Why didn't she go, this woman's not okay? I was hysterical and I said, I just need you to tell me I'm not a terrible mum. And she said, you can always try to undo the damage you've done when it comes to weaning. And that one line, I still have therapy just for that one line. The bit where I was like, I've done damage, it's irreparable, I can't do anything about this. And that, and it's baffling to me, but that was what she said. And so you never quite...
What did you say back to her, by the way?
Yeah.
I went, oh, okay, great, bye.
When do I start the weaning and how do I do that?
I didn't know, because you don't know anything. And you're relying on all these people. And actually, that's bullshit, you do know. If we are, like, if we can really lean into trusting our gut and listening to our instincts when it comes to having babies and being mums, we'd be much better off. But there's so many books about, not mine, about parenting.
It's all right, you can buy that one. Don't mind the other one.
You've got a book?
Oh, sorry, did I mention that? Ding. There's so many books, there's so many experts, there's so many this. I think we all are made to feel that we don't know what we're doing and that we need to learn. Mm. And actually we do. I think we do know what we're doing. It's just it doesn't always look the same for everybody.
And I think that's a really key part of what we're trying to do at Made by Mamas as well, is that, you know, a child may get their teeth at 5 months old. Another child may not have any teeth like Luna until they're 13 months old.
Yeah.
But every child will do things at different stages, yet there's just this pressure on us constantly to be like, oh, is your child crawling? Oh, my child's not crawling. Oh, you know, it's just, it's competition. We're pitted off against each other rather than coming together as, you know, as females, as women, as mother, as community.
And like you say, you went back to work really early. Someone else might not feel ready to go back to work for 3 years or never and like their new role and want to be someone new.
Yeah.
I mean, I always found it really difficult when people said to me, oh, you know, you won't care about this when you become a mum. You know, like, I'd be stressing about it. James knows about this. I used to have meltdowns about what I was going to wear. And I can't go because I don't know what to wear. And they'd be like, you won't care about this. And then when I did care about that still, I felt like, oh, well, I'm not a mum then.
Yeah.
I'm not a real mum because I still care about all these things that I cared about before.
You still want to go and get a blow dry. It doesn't make you a real mum.
No, that's bad, isn't it?
You don't want to go out with sick in your hair. That's what you need to do.
You've not got Weetabix on your lapel, then you're failing.
I don't want that.
We all have to deprogram. For me, to be a good mother was to be the sacrifice, put yourself in love.
The martyr.
Don't take care of yourself. Have the rubbish bit of toast. You have the good bit.
You have the really buttery bit.
I'm brought up to believe that.
Yeah.
And it's time to be like, no. Because, you know, also, like, my girls are 11 now, and I've started to meditate. I've got the Calm app, and I take time out, and I lie down, and I find it very decadent. But I'm like, you know what? Let me go meditate. And I heard Daniel going, Ade, Ade. He was, like, calling for me the other side of the house. And I heard Adana go, shh. Mummy's meditating.
Yes!
And I burst into tears because I'm teaching her that taking space is okay and not to be like back up.
She's
taking, and so that you know, someone told me children never listen, they watch.
Yeah.
Mm.
And
oh, wow,
so, isn't that amazing? Yeah, they never listen, they watch. How I treat myself and how I give myself space and how I, you know, I treat myself is what my children see. So I'm trying really hard to deprogram, because being that martyr, how is that helping them?
Yeah. It's not.
Martyrhood and motherhood, I think, are interchanged and mixed up all the time. Mm. And it is, you are supposed to, you know, you only eat the fish fingers that they don't eat. And
or the ones on the floor.
Just don't forget that.
And it's so damaging. And it's, you know, a friend of mine's just had a baby and, you know, and her dad's died 2 days later. And it's her first. And you think,
God,
nobody knows. Like, it's a shit time, even if you've not just had that awful thing, if you've not just lost your dad.
Yeah.
And to go through that, and nobody's there giving her the support, because people just overlook mums who give birth. They're like, we've just given birth. People do it every day.
Yeah, should be happy.
We'll be right back after this short break.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
So why do you think that we don't prioritise ourselves when we become mothers? Why is it only till we get to the point of really snapping and breaking that we start to think, actually, hang on a second, there's a person in this physical body?
The pressure, I think it's society, and I think it's this expectation. We've put this motherhood on a pedestal, and that's what you have to be. And like you say, we are our own worst enemy. That in itself creates our insecurities, which is when we start to get competitive with each other and when we start to get triggered when people go, oh, well, I'm still breastfeeding until they're 2 years old and you know that you gave them a bottle at 2 weeks. It's all of that. And I think it's almost like the patriarchy of trying to divide and conquer. Yeah. And we need to just be like, no, this is okay. You can do you, I can do me. There's no right or wrong decisions. Yeah. Every decision you make for your child and yourself is the right decision. And we need to be more supportive, I think, of each other as women in that, because nobody's going to do that for us. Mm.
Compassion for yourself and for others. Absolutely. I think that is the key for me, and not have been mothering a competitive sport, which it has been. Yeah. Oh, hell, she's playing the violin and she's 3 months old.
What, your son died? Did
your son do that? Well, she can't lift her head.
Do you know what I realised? I realised my youngest daughter's 6. And I haven't taught her how to tie her shoelaces.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, we haven't either. But what about Velcro?
Yeah, she's really good at Velcro.
Velcro.
It didn't even occur to me. And I was like, when did we do that with Billy? She'd be like 3. But Bo, poor kid, I mean, at this rate, she's going to be in Velcro a whole life. Yeah.
My mum said to me the other day, talking about that lifting the head up thing, she said, oh, I saw a child the other day, it looked like it was about 3. It's still in a nappy. I said, yeah, that, you know, that's fine. And she went, well, the thing is that you were 9 months old, you sat up, you said, no more nappies. I fucking did not. Going, I know exactly when it was. It's like, as if I, there's no way in hell that I did that.
Love that.
But she's not the problem.
At 9 months.
9 months old as well. Yeah. And I chotted off.
Yes. Speaking in full sentences.
And that's why you're so successful.
I know, exactly.
You
right.
took your nappy off at 9 months old. You know, we're talking a lot about parents, like how we are as parents. Would you say you prefer the you are today to the pre-baby you?
Oh, good question, George.
Ooh, that's a good one. You know what? I do feel I had, you know, I'm a recovering disease to please person. I was a recovering people pleaser. And I think after giving babies, you literally give zero fucks. The mama bear comes out.
Yeah.
And you go feral for your children in a way I've never, like, if someone, you know, you'd lift, you know, when you see those videos of people lifting a truck, like, I love them ferociously in a way I've never, not even myself, because of, like, growing up. Like, so they have taught me so many lessons of love and, like, expectation. I've done the best thing I'm ever going to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Everything else is sprinkles.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I love that.
So, yeah, so, you know, being their mum is the best thing I know that I were ever going to do, and that has taken the pressure off. It has made me want to be, you know, I look at them and I want the world to be better for them.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I always thought, God, once I have children, that's it. Your life is over. Volume down, career down. But you know, I don't think I've been more of an activist. I've been more fighting because I want to make the world beautiful for them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, it sounds really creepy, but they've inspired me.
Yeah.
Creepy. No, they have inspired me, and they want me to be a better person and just, I have. So do I prefer? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yes, I do. Even when they're not going to bed and being naughty or whatever, but that, they do.
Yeah.
What about you, Kat?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that my handle is not so smug now. I mean, I was that insufferable person. I was like, he's going to have organic food and wooden toys. And, like, and when, you know, I don't know, whatever the fuck I was on, I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was going to be wonderful and I was going to be this really crunchy mum. Turns out I'm not even close. And I, you know, the part of me wishes I could be. But it also, it's a very humbling experience. And I think about the person who I was before, and she was insecure. And I was desperately worried about what other people thought. Mm. And, you know, there's something about having kids, and like you say, they watch, you know, they don't listen, they watch. And knowing that you're under scrutiny, you know, because you only have to say one bad word once and they can be 500 yards away, but they'll hear it. Oh. I mean, you can be next to them and ask them to put their fucking shoes on. Yeah. They don't hear that.
No, no.
But they can be three doors down
yeah.
and you're like, fuck this. They come in and all of a sudden they're saying, fuck this.
Put your fucking shoes on.
Yeah. So, but I've, I'm definitely a better person for having kids. And I don't know if I would have gone into recovery if I didn't have kids, you know, because when I was drinking, putting myself in danger was never enough. Like, horrific things happened to me when I was drinking, when I was in blackout. It should have been more than enough for me to hold my hands up and say, that's my rock bottom. But as long as it was just me in danger, wasn't enough. Right. It was only when it started to affect my kids that I was like, this is not okay. And so for that, I'll always be grateful, because I don't know if I would have gone into recovery if I didn't have kids, if I didn't have anybody else to think about.
Can we talk about our relationships after having kids? And do we feel like we're in the same relationship now? Is it better? Is it worse?
So much better now.
Are your husband's here just before? Yeah.
Are you joking? I was
How
like,
are we gonna
I was
be?
Like, I was like, do you want to come? Yeah. And he was like, why would I want to come? I was like, I don't know. I mean, I've watched you on enough fucking stages.
Are you going to play guitar?
Yeah.
No, I should have practiced my instrument harder. You go.
Go on.
I mean, Dan and we've been together since we were 19.
Wow.
We were babies. Gosh. He's always been my best friend. But I respect and love him more now because of what kind of dad he is.
Mm. Yeah.
So I'm like, I've always really loved at him. And I'm like, wow, what a beautiful dad you are as well. And I'm sort of proud of him as well. Cause I'm like, look at you. Yeah. Look at you. So I know. So I would definitely say, I mean, it's challenging. Mm. It is like the hardest thing I've ever done. Raising, like keeping two little people alive and happy and healthy. And I mean, who you choose to breed with is very important.
Breed? Mate.
Yeah. And yeah, so I definitely think much stronger. And I said to Daniel, you know, whatever happens in our life, whatever happens, we've made these people together.
Yeah.
You know, so you're bonded, not even for now, but for forever.
Yeah.
Like in 500 years when someone's doing their ancestry.com, they can look back and see. So I don't know, it's a bond. And it's a beautiful thing to.
Yeah, and a hard thing.
It's
hard.
Well, now it is. I am great. Like, and I know this sounds so, I can't even believe I'm going to say it. I'm fucking grateful every day that I'm married to the man I'm married to.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
That being said, you know, we nearly divorced. Like, there was a time, there was a time I drove in to the house and walked into the house and sat down and I said, I've figured it all out. I've rented a flat in down the road. We're going to birds nest it. We're separating. Neither of us can do this anymore. And so when I'm with the kids, I'll be in the house and you'll be in the flat and we'll do it like that. And Jimmy's like, what? Mm. And I was just like, and we were both so unhappy. And this was probably Billy was about four, so 4 years after we'd had our first baby, maybe five actually. And I just couldn't see a way out. Every time we walked into a room, I wanted to punch him. I couldn't bear to be around him. Everything he did annoyed me. I didn't feel like I had a partner. I felt like we were just co-parenting in the same house. Mm-hmm. And now looking back on it, neither of us prioritised our relationship. Mm. But we went into couples therapy and I didn't want to go and I was like, no, I'm done. I've got the fucking flat.
The flat is there.
Paid 3 months on the flat. Thankfully, she was a friend. She did give me the money back. For the first time, we'd been in therapy before, but I think I'd been faking it. Like, I'm an addict, so I sought out somebody who's very codependent. So Jimmy's very codependent. He likes to take on all the problems himself. He likes to go, it's all my fault, I'm really sorry. So previously, I allowed him to do that. And I was like, see, look how fucked up he is. Can you even believe him?
Fix him.
Like, don't you feel sorry for me now? Yeah. Perhaps I wasn't as perfect as I thought.
Yeah, that
was.
Oh, no.
No. It's been a series of very humbling moments for me, parenthood. And that was really, really central. And in fact, for 6 weeks after going into therapy, we didn't talk outside of therapy. Like, when the kids were around, we were civil. Ooh. But when they went around, we couldn't, because we just couldn't trust each other to not say. And it was so raw and it was so painful. And it came down to the fact that we'd never processed that first year of having Billy properly.
And I'd felt terrified. I was traumatized. I was alone. I was obviously drinking, but that wasn't really on the table yet. Well, not for me, for Jimmy. He was like, yeah, you were definitely an alcoholic then. But he was away. Right. He was like, my only role is to make sure this baby's okay, because she's a nightmare. Like, she's on the floor. Right. So all about the baby. And we've had to... And so it was a really fucked up thing, and it really degraded our relationship. And we just got to a point where we couldn't do it. But now we are in such an incredible place, largely because I think we've both accepted that this Hollywood bullshit myth of what a good marriage and a good relationship is that? Just that.
Yeah.
It's bollocks. It's not ripping your clothes off and having sex on the kitchen counters and bringing flowers all the time. And
I would actually quite like flowers.
You know, and this whole thing that they should just know.
Yeah.
I relied on telepathy as a viable means of communication in my relationship for far too long.
It doesn't work.
Who knew? Yeah. It doesn't work.
But then we stopped talking about things outside of, you know, the endless lists, the school pickups, you know, who's going to go and collect Timmy from Johnny's party.
But I think that's okay as well. Like, there is...
Yeah, but there has to be other layers to it. You can't just be discussing logistics.
No, of course, but there is an element of accepting that when you have kids, your relationship is going to change for a period.
Mm.
Like, it just is. There are going to be periods of time where you don't have sex very often, where you do talk about little Johnny's school trip or whatever. And it's just a period of time. And the fact is, if we're supposed to be married, if we end up married for the rest of our life, very short period of time. Just that.
But accepting that is half the battle. Both of you accepting that.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay, like, here we are.
It's a journey.
It's a journey. There's ups and downs.
Totally. Yeah, and really also acceptance of, you know, someone coming home and you haven't had a shower.
Yeah.
You know, you've got yesterday and the day before, and the day before that's pyjama bottom still on.
Yeah.
Your greasy hair on the top of your head. The last thing you want to do is use an armchair to get, you know, slung over it.
Yeah.
You want to just sit down and someone bring you a cup of tea. But you
make
have to
me
be
a
able
cup
to,
of tea.
Yeah, just sit down.
Give me your pyjama bottom.
Yeah, the bar's really low at that point.
Yeah.
But our therapist said one thing to me which changed our whole thing. And she said, I think I was banging on about the fact that he left the plates on top of the on the counter, on top of the dishwasher, instead of taking that extra 5 seconds to open it and put it in.
I'd argue three.
And he was like, I don't get what the big deal is. And I was like, because you might as well just say, fuck you, you can do it.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. But the therapist said, the problem here is that you didn't feel very kept in mind.
Mm.
And it was like, do you know what? That's a much better way of saying it. When I thought about it, that's exactly what it was.
Mm.
I felt like he just didn't keep me in mind. I wasn't thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it's like that. It's like cherishing. It's the same thing. And so now when he puts the plates on top of the dishwasher, I just turn around and go, I don't feel very kept in mind.
Yeah.
But you laugh, but given us language.
No, great.
And he's like now, oh, okay, get it.
Yeah. I'll do it. I'll start the dishwasher. You know? Now, before we break for the interval, because it's coming up, don't worry, you can get yourself watered and go to the loo. We would love to ask you the best piece of advice that you have ever been given by a parent, or the piece of advice that you'd like to give a new parent.
The best piece of advice wasn't from someone who told me to drink lots of white wine so the baby sleeps. Which was a madness.
That
was,
I like that person.
Told me. The best piece of advice was I was armed with this phrase, which I used the entire time. Thank you for your help and thank you for what you have to say, but if it's a mistake, it's my mistake to make. This is my baby. Back the fuck off.
Oh. Yes, that's
you know when everyone's telling you what to do, and it just really diminishes your, you know what? Back off.
Yeah, leave me be.
Back the fuck off. Right, got it.
Back the fuck off.
I'll practice
and sometimes
that in the
you need to whip them out, you know that phrase. But what it means is, it's what you were saying, trust yourself.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't need 1,000 opinions. I don't need this or that. I can trust myself.
Yeah.
Mm. Or back the fuck off.
Really?
I love it.
Either work. Yeah, all of that.
Yeah, I would say that to a new parent.
Cat.
I suppose the thing that I found that really transformed my experience was when because my instinct is to isolate, right? When you're, and parenting is perfect for that because you're like, oh, I can't come, I've got the baby. Oh, the baby's, there's a million reasons why you shouldn't go anywhere. And I think you definitely do not need to be overdoing it. But I think really finding people that you can cry with, ask for help with, be honest with, and that might be just one person, that doesn't trigger you. So definitely not your mum, because my mum was that for me for a while and that did not go very well. Mm. And really being vulnerable, actually, being able to be vulnerable, yeah. because none of us, I'm shocking at it, but you do have to be able to go, I can't do this, I'm really struggling, and can somebody please help me? And
find your tribe.
Yeah, yeah, find your tribe. And I didn't want to say that because I hate that phrase. But
oh,
yeah.
God, sorry.
No, it's all right. You just can't get
off
the stuff.
Off you go. See you later.
I didn't mean it like that. What I meant was, I was like, you know, that's really cliche. Do you know what I mean? It's people say that to you all the time, don't they? They're like, find your tribe. And you're like, fuck off.
Where's my tribe?
Yeah, yeah. Have a tribe. Yeah. I don't want a tribe. I just need one person. Yeah. And that's it. That's what you found, right? And that was, for me, the biggest thing where I found I could actually finally be honest with somebody.
Yeah. With not your tribe, but just that one person.
Yeah, definitely not tribe.
So forget the tribe, just one person.
ladies, we're going to have to wrap things up. Please, 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 please put your hands together and give a massive, massive round of applause.
Thank you.
Ashley,
oh, it's so lovely to hear that conversation back again, because when we were on stage chatting to the girls, it went so fast.
I know. It's weird, actually, because I didn't remember half of that conversation until we listened back.
I know. I thought the two of them bounced really well off each other. I love both of their energy. So, you know, Atte, so funny. Kat.
Oh, she literally lights up a room, Atte. Like, oh,
doesn't
like
she?
Everything she says as well. You're like, oh, just the way she just has a beautiful way with words.
Well, the way she said, oh, it's my, if I make a mistake, it's my mistake. Basically, fuck you. Yeah. And I was like, everyone went, woohoo.
Yeah. And then also Kat, like, she's just so incredibly strong. And also the way she articulates what she's been through. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, even if you haven't got sort of addiction problems, lots of people can relate to a lot of what she was saying.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, those early days where you're just kind of walking obsessively around the park thinking, you know, what am I doing?
What the hell's going on? Yeah. She said, she spoke to me afterwards, George, and she said, at the beginning, you'll hear her, and I said, you know, so, you know, you entered motherhood drinking and now you're not, you know, why? Mm. And she was like, because I'm an alcoholic and an addict. She thought that everyone in the audience was going to laugh, and everyone went, oh. And then she went, no, you can laugh. You can laugh. And
yeah.
That's somebody that's been sober for a year that can, you know, that expects, you know, that is okay with people laughing at that. I know it's not a funny subject, but.
No, but she's got a lot of, you know, she's got a lot of humour, hasn't she, about her. So that's obviously just the way she likes to talk about things.
Yeah, brilliant.
Right. Well, I think we need to thank lots of the amazing brands that were in the goodie bags. Also, we want to extend some of the offers to you guys as well.
Yep.
Who are listening. I'm going to kick us off because they're called the Uncommon Wine. You might have seen them in M&S and Waitrose. Well, they're a beautiful English sparkling wine. I actually had the rosé on Saturday. It is so, so nice and perfect if you just want like one drink and you don't want to open a whole bottle. Now, they're actually offering 40% off your first order with a code MUMMERS40, and that's on their website. And they have never done a discount this big before. So we are really lucky to get that. The code is MAMMAS40. Amazing gift, and even just for yourself as well.
Yeah, and if you go to the website, we are theuncommon.co.uk. You can find it there, place your order. As Georgia said, obviously you can find them in the supermarket as well, or, you know, it's just perfect for like a posh train tinny, which, you know, as we always say. There's just nothing better than sitting on a train and having a lovely drink. We also want to give a big shout out to Never Fully Dressed. They're one of our favourite brands anyway. We love their clothes, but they provided the goodie bags. They provided these absolutely beautiful tote bags. And they've just been super supportive to us. So make sure you check them out. They've got some gorgeous party wear as well. If you're still looking for something this side of Christmas or an amazing outfit on Christmas Day, they could be right up your street.
Yeah. And then, as a lot of you know, we've been working with Biosculpture recently, which is why our nails have been looking so lovely. And they actually popped nail varnish into the goodie bag, but they are also offering 10% off for anyone who wants to buy them. And that's just Made by Mummers, spelt how we spell it, and that's 10% off. So another great offer.
Love that. You know how Georgia and I, you know, we're basically, if anyone came around to our house and wanted, you know, a beauty product, it would be like walking into a shop, because we're obsessed with beauty products. We're obsessed with sheet masks, and Gold Collagen actually donated one of their sheet masks, their face masks, for the goodie bag. They are the market leader in collagen in the UK, and we absolutely adore these face masks. They're such a nice stocking filler as well, or a gift to give to your mates. So yeah, definitely check out Gold Collagen.
Yeah, absolutely love them. And I mean, we don't really need to introduce this brand because I'm sure everyone's heard of it. Tweezer Man, the only tweezers that you will ever need. I actually don't do lots with my eyebrows, but I always have a little set in my makeup bag just for any like little stray hairs. They are absolutely the best. So yeah.
Such a nice stocking filler as well. For that, I'll just say that I've got the tweezers, which I've had for years, but I also just recently got their, they do like a mirror as well, which is like a magnifying mirror. So it's perfect. You can just keep it in your makeup bag just for those, any of those unwanted hairs.
Even when they're on your chin.
Oh, God.
As I keep getting recurring hair that's
pluck them away. Yeah. And no one will know, George. Thank you so much again for everybody that came down, for you guys for listening to this episode. We've got two more podcasts from the live that are going to be coming out over the next couple of weeks. Hope the Christmas preparations are going all right in your house. As always, we would love you to rate, review, subscribe, and give the podcast a little follow.
Yeah, and if you did come down to the live, then please drop us some feedback either in our DMs or by the email that's in the show notes. And if you have got any guests you'd like to hear from or topics you'd like us to cover next year, then again, just drop us a message and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.